Good evening and Om Shanti. A greeting of peace to my sisters and my brothers. The music and the dances created a beautiful atmosphere in which I feel our minds and hearts are open. Is that right? It's wonderful that so many of you have responded to our invitation and have made the effort to come here to be with us here this evening. Thank you for coming. Thinking about the subject, God's healing power, I had a question in my mind. Is there anyone at this moment in human history who doesn't need some type of healing? Some might need healing for the body. Some might need healing for their emotions. Some might need healing for the spirit. Definitely, many relationships are in need of healing, but also this planet of ours, this world, that's very much in need of healing too. So much that's been happening on this sacred earth that is very unholy, not sacred at all. And so not only are human souls scarred and wounded, but the planet, the earth, is very scarred. And so we see lots of upheaval in nature also. And it's actually a direct result of the things that human beings have done. And so who's going to heal nature and this planet? If God were to come and live on this planet, then God could heal and God could enjoy. But if human beings are here on this planet and they have done whatever it is that's happened, then it's humans who carry the responsibility of healing the planet, making it whole, and then creating the conditions in which we can once again enjoy a relationship of cooperation and harmony and symbiosis with nature. And we can't do this on our own, but it's through our connection with the divine. But firstly, the healing of the self. If I think about the situations that have led to ill health in terms of the body, yes, there's many factors which are maybe genetic, there's many factors which are maybe climatic, there's many factors which are due to viruses, but what I've discovered through people in the medical arena who tell me that researchers indicated that you can have genetic deficiency, you can have all sorts of viruses in the atmosphere, but it's only under certain conditions that all these things attack us, or that whatever is there within the genes is actually expressed. And they will then link it back with consciousness, with the human psyche, with the human mind. And when the human mind is in a positive, healthy state, then all the viruses that exist since millennia, they would still be here, but if our immune system was strong because the mind was happy and healthy, then the viruses would do nothing. Genetic imbalance, again. Why is it that sometimes the genes express and sometimes they suppress? What is the factor? Again, very much connected with the human consciousness and the psyche. And I'm sure there's medical people here who know about these things more than I do. But what I do know is that once a person begins to take charge of what's going on within the mind and make that connection with the divine, then God's love, God's light, healing the mind, making the mind strong and positive and powerful, is then able to make a shift within the condition of the body also. Many, many stories, real stories, examples to illustrate this. And so, in terms of actually getting you out of bed and saying, come on, you're going to be fine, you're going to be well, I don't know that God actually does that. Maybe he does. Maybe every day that you jump out of bed, it's because God is waking you up and is giving you the inspiration and courage to move on. But in terms of actual physical health, I know that God gives light and love to the soul, and through that change, light is spread into the physical body, and that light actually is able to heal. The second aspect, emotional healing. Is there a human being who can remove all the sorrow that's accumulated deep within the heart of every human being? We're at a strange time in history when things that would be considered totally abnormal are happening, and somehow we've adapted and adjusted to all sorts of abnormal situations, and now we say, well, that's okay, that's life. Have you seen that happening? Things that even 50 years ago we would have said, no, this isn't normal, this isn't as it should be. And today we've adapted, we've changed, and our standards are different. And today we'll say, it's okay, that's life, that's how it is. And I'm thinking in particular of something that's happening in London at the moment, and I'm sure Copenhagen is not so different. But recently I heard that there are now more single parent families in London than the usual type of family with parents. That's the story of one city. That definitely wasn't the case some years ago, and it definitely wasn't the case when I was growing up. And today, what is it that's happened that's caused such sorrow and pain within human beings that relationships have been broken and we see things like that happen? How can that emotional pain be cared for? I look around here and here and here and here. I go shopping to find love here and there and everywhere, and it's not there. Yes, maybe a short time, but a love that's unconditional, a love that's able to take away my pain and empower me and strengthen me and heal me. At some point of time, when we begin to think about all these things, we then realize that, in fact, the pain started because we broke away from that connection, and the pain will finish when that connection is again repaired and strengthened. God's healing power works enormously in terms of the consciousness of the soul, and is able to give the soul such a glimpse of unconditional love that the soul moves forward and opens itself up to be able to receive it more and more. We had a social worker who has been awarded various humanitarian awards in England, and she came to us to a meeting that we had, a retreat that we had for social workers, and she was sharing something very interesting. It's a company called the Kids Company, and what they do is have children teach children, have children counsel children, and help children. And It's been going now for a few years, and she said that what she had found was that, and she was talking about situations in London, and London's not supposed to be the developing world, but in every developed world city we find pockets, patches where there's similar conditions that apply probably. And in this particular case, what she was talking about was how kids who had been so traumatized that they'd built up defenses so that there was a wall that was very hard, that nothing could penetrate. And they could not trust, they could not receive love, they could not give love, because they had been traumatized, their trust had been broken. And so giving, and then deception, and so they built up their defenses for self-protection. But the other very interesting thing about this was, not only was it the lack of exchange of love, but it was also the inability to feel pain. They had closed themselves up so strongly that nobody could hurt them anymore. But the other side of this that was so dangerous, because they themselves had created that protection from pain, it also meant that when they now hurt another, physically or emotionally, they could not understand that they were causing pain. Now that's a dangerous, dangerous situation, because pain is protection. If I put my hand in the fire and I feel the pain, I'm going to withdraw. It's not a conscious thing. It's the temperature is too hot. It's automatic. And so the mechanism for protection that we have is pain. It's one of the mechanisms, a powerful mechanism. But where the defenses have been built up artificially to such a degree that you can't feel pain and you don't know when you're causing pain, now that's a scenario of the sort of society that we have created at the present time. What do you do about all this? Well, before I can do anything about anyone else, I have to be able to experience the healing myself. And what is it that leads me to search for God? Different things. Sometimes it's a very deep feeling that we have, that we want to know. We are searching for truth. We are searching for answers. Sometimes there's been an awareness of God, but it's been like at the back of the consciousness. And then when we find ourselves in a situation where nothing else seems to help, then that memory that has faded again emerges and again comes back. And we start looking. Maybe we're just lucky. Maybe we're not looking for God, but God has been looking for us and finds us. So different possibilities, but within that whole area, there's also another factor, a factor of time. When it's the season for something to happen, then it happens automatically. Now that it's warm, all of you are enjoying a fantastic summer. And if we had said that these sort of temperatures and this sort of sunshine should happen in the month of February or January or December, how is it possible? But we didn't have to do anything about it. But naturally, with the passage of time, with the flow of the seasons, then the heat came. And today we can't even imagine what it feels like to be cold and shivering. But the time will come, and that also will be our experience. And so things that otherwise seem difficult or impossible happen in a very natural way according to the passage of time. And in terms of the human history cycle, and I don't know how many of you were observing the dancers closely, because I know that they had to perform on the floor, and maybe I had the privilege of watching them from here, but I think maybe some of you caught parts of it, but not all of it. But the last song was a song of Shiva. Om Namah Shivaya, salutations to Shiva, we bow to Shiva. And the word Shiva means the benefactor. And there's different ideas, but the idea that feels comfortable for me is where we think about Shiva as not a human form or even a subtle form, but Shiva also means point. Shiva also means seed. And Shiva means the benefactor. The translation of the word is this. And Shiva means the supreme light, the being of light, the divine, the parent of the whole of humanity. And one of the things, the actions that were being performed was, there was towards the end, a bit of the martial arts that came in, and a scene of aggression and, you know, the battle cry and the fight. And within the mythology of India, they say that Shiva is the creator, but Shiva is also the destroyer. But what that means is not destroy, destroy, but it means very specifically the destruction of evil. Now that's why Shiva is called the benefactor, because the Almighty has the power that no one has, and that is the power to destroy all evil. And things happen in cycles, the seasons, the day and night, everything. You think about anything and you won't find a straight line in nature. You'll find cycles and curves, part of cycles. And human history also goes through cycles. And the period of time that we're passing through now is the most interesting in human history, because it's a confluence, it's a junction point, a time when evil is at its maximum, but also within that darkness of evil. And you just have to open up your newspaper to find that evil is at its highest. It's absolutely the darkest hour at this moment. But yet, within that, you also find love for God emerging. God isn't a topic that I've been asked to speak on in Copenhagen, and I've been coming here for 20 years. 20 years ago, if we'd had a theme like God's healing power, let me guess, how many would have been here in this hall? Maybe five. And the season has changed. Today, all of you came knowing that it was a talk that was going to be taking up the theme of God. God has become acceptable within our vocabulary and language today. Vegetarian diet, again, something that I was a vegetarian since I was born, a natural vegetarian. My parents weren't at that point. I was. So when we came to England in the 50s, I could only eat at home, because if I were to eat outside anywhere, they only knew how to give me mashed potatoes and boiled cabbage. Literally, there was nothing else that they could give me at school or in restaurants. Today it's changed. Very, very different. Completely different. These are just two things. But another thing that's been happening, a greater awareness of a holistic approach. Holism in education, holism in health and medicine, holism in architecture, many different areas of human life are beginning to look at all of these things from a holistic perspective. It's a time when light is beginning to enter the world. When it's the darkest hour, that's the time when light comes. And so we've been through the dark night, and now it's time to experience God. It's time to experience God's healing power. Everything happens at the right moment, and this is the moment that this is now happening in the human world. It's not difficult to know God. That's been one of the illusions that have kept us away from experiencing God. We've been told that you need to study philosophy, you need to study theology, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do the other. Maybe it's rituals, maybe it's devotion, all sorts of things. And it's not true. Why? Because God is my parent. Every parent has a natural relationship with the child. And every parent wants to be close to the child. Even though I was talking about the darkest hour, we describe it in India as Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, the age of darkness, the machine age, the age of death. This word Kali Yuga describes all of these things. And so relationships are very unnatural in a thousand different ways. I don't need to elaborate. But yet, even at such a time, the bond of parent and child is such a natural and powerful one that they want to come together. There's a desire to know, a desire to belong, a natural sense of belonging. And that's what is needed in terms of my relationship with the divine. To know that it's the most natural experience of human life to be able to know God and experience God's love and experience the healing that God's love is able to bring. I just need to know one thing, and that one thing has been a challenge. Before I can know God, I need to know myself. Now that's the crunch. How well do I know myself? I've been living with myself for how many years? 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, however long it's been. I've been living with this skin, with this body, with myself, even before I took birth, right? And yet, how well do I know myself? We talk about identity crisis, and it's not just a racial factor, it's not just a cultural factor or a gender factor. It truly is because our minds are so confused with all the images that have been given to us artificially from outside that we don't really know who we are and we don't know what it is we really want. If I don't know what I want, how can I expect you to know what I want? How can I expect you to know to be able to fulfill what I need? Not possible. And so part of the trauma of emotional upheaval, our expectations are actually very impossible to achieve. Not possible at the present time. How can I know myself? By spending time with myself. If you want to know someone else, how do you do that? Your interest, your motivation, and because of that, you make time. The easiest thing to say in the world today is, I'm busy. I don't have time. And we say that to even those who are closest to us. When do I give quality time to the people I'm supposed to love the most? And be with the most? Question. I was reading in the paper on the plane coming across today that You know, they always say how television has been a divisive factor. It's taken away the skill of communication and conversation, right? Where families used to sit together and talk together, now you sit in front of this little box. And what happens to communication? It's a one-way flow from the box to me and to everyone else. There's no interaction, no communication happening. But this was now an additional point that they were mentioning. They were mentioning that at least some time ago, now in Britain, and again, probably similar here, but they were saying that some time ago, at least every family had one television set, and so everybody sat around and worshipped this little box. And today, most families have five sets. The average family in Britain now has five sets because every bedroom has its own television. And teenagers have a territorial possessiveness about their bedrooms, and they have all sorts of electronic gadgetry, but they have their own television. So even where television was already divisive, but today a total separation and total breakdown in communication. How do I get to know myself? Never mind getting to know you. I need to make time for myself. And getting to know myself in one way is as quick as this. I need to turn my attention inwards. Through the physical senses, I get to know the world out there. But to get to know myself, I need to turn my attention inside. And when I try and do this, probably the first thing that happens is a whole torrent of negativity. All the rubbish that I have been avoiding, and I'm sure that this is... I have to get used to this little microphone. All the rubbish that we've been avoiding, thinking about, we've been suppressing, and we live life on an external, superficial level so that we don't have time to look at what's going on inside. I'm sure that this has been one of the escape mechanisms that we've created so that we don't have time to see what's going on in our own mind, in our world inside. And so now I say, I want to change this. I really want to know who I am and what I am. What am I like? What is happening in my world inside? And just a little bit of patience. And that rush of thoughts of negativity. Two types of negativity usually. Firstly, all the things that other people have done. All of that comes rushing out. And all the pain of that again emerges. But the next thing that happens is all the stuff that I have done, that I didn't want myself to think about. I didn't want to let my conscience speak to me. I've been avoiding it. But of course, it's there recorded. And so, in silence, giving myself time, that's the second thing that comes out. And sometimes, by this time, we're already exhausted. And so you say, oh, forget about this. And we then turn on the music, turn on the television, and we create the noise to escape the silence. But no, just a little bit of patience. And let that settle and say, okay, I'm going to come back and deal with all those things in just a little while. The things out there, the things I've done and said, okay, I'll come back to it. But you carry on letting the mind become a little bit quiet, and then you discover that there is peace within your own inner being. There is a space of stillness, a space of quiet, which is sacred. Your inner core being is one of goodness. You connect with that, and this is who I am. It's not a denial of all the other stuff, but certainly I'm not my skin, that's for sure. Certainly I'm not this form. That's not me. What can you know of my personality just seeing this? It doesn't tell you very much. But I am that living, conscient consciousness, the being inside. And coming back to that awareness, and I'll just share this with you now and you can explore it and investigate it another time. But the seat of consciousness within the human body is here. And this is why this has been sometimes described as the location of the third eye, the eye of wisdom, not an eye that somebody does surgery and opens up for you, but the eye of wisdom. And when I stabilize myself in this awareness of who I am, I begin to feel that energy glowing. I begin to feel the light coming on, the soul again beginning to shine. And in that awareness of my own spiritual identity, I'm open to be able to receive God's light, God's love, and that connection with God. And this is essentially the main reason why we lost contact. We got trapped into this body, this skin. And so this became the wall. And in that I said, well, only the things that I can touch and feel and measure, only those things are real. And I forgot that emotions and consciousness and conscience and values and memory, all these things are not tangible. I can't measure and weigh and put a tape around them. But they're real. That's who I am. That's the makeup of my identity. The memories that I carry, the personality that I have, that is me, not this. And so coming back to that awareness and experimenting with that consciousness of being this point of light, I connect with the being of light who is the supreme. And that's all it takes. Just letting my mind turn towards the supreme, knowing that the supreme is the source of love, of truth, of joy, of peace. Everything that I want in my life is available from one. I've been searching here and there and everywhere, and I get a glimpse of it from time to time, and then it disappears, it eludes, because it's transient, it doesn't stay. But the divine is the source, and in that connection, everything is available. And so first step, the recognition of the self. Second step, the recognition of the divine. Third step, just focusing my mind on that being of light. Next step, I'm actually able to experience through that connection God's qualities reaching me. Then it's not a prayer or a chant. You are the ocean of love, you are the ocean of peace. It's an actual experience that these are the qualities that are reaching me from the divine. Next step, I absorb these qualities within myself, and the emotional healing, the healing of the spirit, begins to happen. As I fill myself with God's love and light, things get sorted out and things get repaired and put back into place. And of course, there's a whole detailed explanation about what the mind is, what is consciousness, what is intellect, what are emotions and feelings and all of this. And all of that can be taken up and studied. But tonight I just wanted to affirm with you this fact that all of these things are a reality and a possibility, that these are things that are within reach. And so we begin to experience, we then begin to fill, And as we fill ourselves with those qualities, the process of becoming whole begins to happen. And the next and very beautiful step, then those qualities are not just part of your experience, but as you fill, you become instruments to share those qualities with others. The inner experience becomes the outer expression. What you have experienced is what you're now beginning to express in your life, so that it reaches all those around you. And so the healing is happening not just for you, but through you, with everyone who you're in contact with. And those vibrations are very powerful. Vibrations are not restricted by walls or by space. And those vibrations, as we connect with the divine and we send out those vibrations of light and purity and peace, those vibrations actually transform the world because they heal the world. They heal people, but also the actual earth itself, the planet and nature itself. This is the way in which humanity can move forward into a new era. We thought that with the dawn of the 21st century, there would be something new happening. And so far, all we've seen is an intensification of the old. We've just seen more of the same negative stuff become even more powerful. And yet, once we decide that we're going to let God's light heal us, we ourselves, having gone through that process, then we can become instruments to transform the world. That is the vision that I hold in front of myself. So first, God's healing touches me and transforms me, and then all of us together, we create a better world together. Let me stop here and see if there are questions. Or comments.
Jeg har en mikrofon her som jeg kan gi til noen hvis det er noen der har lyst til å stille noen spørsmål. Eller kommentere noe. Ja. Sister Jante, you told about the work with the children, and you mentioned that the children, they teach other children, but...
In the case of street children, yes. It hasn't been possible for the adults to reach the street children, but these children who have come close, they are able to help the others come.
Anyone else? You all know how to get to know yourself and get to know God. There's one. Thank you.
You mentioned that at the beginning of the 21st century there was a lot of hope, but those hopes haven't been fulfilled and things seem to be getting worse.
I'm sorry. The sound isn't clear. Can you start again?
Sure. You said that at the beginning of the century there appeared to be a lot of hope, but that hope seems to be diminishing as things seem to be getting worse than they had been before. Do you think things will get even worse than this in the next 10 or 20 years?
Certainly within the next few years, I can see things getting worse. I don't say the next 20 years, but my hope is that within a few years, there'll be enough of a critical mass. It's still a minority maybe, but enough of a critical mass to be able to shift the majority opinion so that people know that the only way forward is through non-violence, peace, and truth.
Hello, Sister Jayanti. Like in India, you say, if I am to learn Danish, for example, then I have to go to the Danish teacher. And you say that you can feel the God power by doing meditation, or you can by concentrating on yourself. But is it not right that you need a guru or you need a teacher to know the God first, then feel it afterwards?
I think it's important to share knowledge and information. And so, yes, a teacher in that sense, definitely. And it's not an advertisement, but just information that, in fact, just 10 minutes away from here, we have a center where there are meditation courses, and so teaching is needed, but not in the sense of a specific human personality, but knowledge is needed, yes, definitely.
After all the quest, the good things that you said, why is there reluctancy to question? Is that a part of the evil that you spoke about?
I'm not sure that I heard you correctly. Let me repeat the question.
Okay.
You're asking if there's a reluctance for the quest.
Is there?
And is that part of the evil?
Is there a reluctancy to question, like here?
Okay.
To question, to ask you. We have an opportunity. So is that a part of the evil that keeps us in the place that we are?
I think the reluctance to question here is a different situation to a reluctance to question out there. I think the reluctance to question here is because my feeling is that there was a great acceptance as I was speaking. And I think that that's an indication that the basic, simple things that I was sharing that you can't really challenge in a sense. You could, but I think I'm speaking to a group that's already ready. But I'll take up your other point that out there, there's a great reluctance to question. For example, there's a scientific paradigm and we'll accept it without questioning because a scientist had said something must be true. And so we're getting into a very dangerous situation where we put people on pedestals and we just accept without questioning. And that is part of the evil because it means that my conscience is blocked, it's locked. When celebrities say something and do something, and even though their value system might be totally corrupt, yet we will still put them on a pedestal and say that, you know, whatever they say is what we have to do and follow in their footsteps. And so there's been a decline in values in a very, very major way, and we've accepted it without question. And so there is that situation in India. They have a very interesting image that describes this. They say that there was a sleeping giant, and his name was Kumbhakarna. And they say that, and what the word means is Kumbha, it's an earthenware pot, a vessel, and Karan means ear. And they say that the sleeping giant was so fast asleep that even when they tried to shake him, he wouldn't wake up. When they tried to put things into his ears, he still wouldn't wake up. He continued to stay in that slumber. And it's symbolic of the situation where instead of using our minds and consciousness, it's just an earthenware pot. It's an empty vessel here. And so I'm hearing a sound reach me, but I'll ignore it. I'll say, oh, that's nothing to do with me. It doesn't make any sense. And so I'm not willing to listen and be awake. And it's that state where it's as if, you know, there isn't that awareness and alertness that we have to take charge of our lives. We have to take charge of what's going on in the planet. I mean, the easiest thing for me would be to take up the situation of the Iraq war and describe it in detail, but I'm resisting the temptation to get into politics. but you're talking about a situation of slumber, of good people who forget to wake up and say, hey, this is wrong. This shouldn't be happening like this. And so, yes, a manifestation of evil is the state of ignorance and slumber, definitely.
I would like to hear your opinion about interreligious dialogue and how different religions could go together to work in this enlightenment.
Interfaith, interreligious dialogues is one of that aspect of light. I was talking about the darkness, and within the darkness you're seeing the rays of light come. And that stage where we are grounded in our own faith and yet we have sufficient self-respect and dignity to be able to recognize the good in another religion so that it truly is a dialogue and not a process of conversion, I think we've reached that stage of maturity where we are beginning to see this happen. And it's happening more in some countries than in other countries. But yes, definitely, it's one of the aspects of light and the awakening of humanity.
I have a question, but also I want to add something to this talk about the children with the heart, the wall around the heart, because you said about all this knowledge and scientific knowledge coming. Suddenly there are new books saying that we know nothing about crisis and traumatic crisis. So we have to watch the nature and to see the way the animals play and dance out of the crisis, out of their traumatic. Because if they are threatened on death and they survive, they don't have a traumatic part of their life afterwards, because they use dance and drama, they use creativity to come out of it. And this is new books coming from the United States, the best part, of course. But I could imagine that Brahma Kumaris would say, yes, but to break through this wall, we must use love. But I have a question about all these single parents coming more and more around, and these children as well. What can we actually do? What kind of program could you imagine?
I can imagine that how do you tell a person you have to repair a relationship? You can't. But what you can do is where you know that there are single parents, give them support, create a community feeling. Because they say that it takes a whole village to raise a child, which is true. I remember my own days of little childhood in India, and it was we were living in apartments, so it wasn't a village in that sense, but within that block of about 22 flats that there were, I could walk into any one of the homes and it would be no problem. My parents knew them and they knew me, and I could have walked into any one of their homes, and it was my home. I was treated as a child of the home, not that, what are you doing here? Or how can I knock on their door? I don't know them. So, and of course, even in India now, that's changed. So my point is creating neighborhoods, communities, where there is that support system and nurture, I think has to be a very powerful way to change this. Lock. Let's have one more question and then we'll have time for meditation. Last question?
Yes, you were talking before about being put on a pedestal, about the celebrities. I was wondering if you have experienced yourself being put on a pedestal, and if you have, what do you do about it?
Well, the problem about being on a pedestal is that as soon as you make a mistake, at least within a spiritual situation, you get shot down very quickly. And so, yes, people, when they first start coming for meditation, it's a tendency that we have. But then you make friends with them. I think they have to see you as a human being. And then within a very short space of time, they know that you've got spots and marks as every other human being. But you have to expose yourself to that friendship and communication. But it's not healthy either to be on a pedestal or to put someone else on a pedestal. Let's try a meditation now. And in fact, I'm going to ask Sonia to conduct the meditation so that it's in Danish. You've been very patient listening to a foreign language all this time, but your own language. Thank you. Thank you for your attention, but also thank you for your questions. Very good questions.